Hello, and welcome to Generation Goat number 6. I'm John Martin from songsthatsavedyourlife.com, and with me as always, E. Christopher Clark from geekforce5.com. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how are you?
Good. So, here we are, Goat number 6.
Goat number 6. I was in the car with a couple of people the other day trying to remember what number we were on, and
nice.
I couldn't, which makes me one hell of a host, I suppose.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
I find my lack of faith disturbing, too. I'm glad that you remember that it's number 6.
I kind of checked.
Oh, okay.
Before we
started. We're like 5, 6, 7, I don't know.
You know, I mean, I think in our readers, listeners, rather, I don't think anybody's reading the Braille version of our podcast, which doesn't exist.
not yet, at least.
Not yet. We'll get on that. But, I think our listeners would agree that these things just seem to stretch on forever.
Yeah.
They're all kind of one seamless blur of, oh, God.
That they are.
What's up?
What's up? Well, I went to... where was I talking about Goat? I was talking about Goat... on the way to a Nine Inch Nails concert the other day.
Exciting.
Nine Inch Nails, Jane's Addiction, and the Street Sweeper Social Club. Unfortunately, we got lost in the streets of Quincy, Massachusetts. Even though we had a tour guide from who deals with Quincy in our car.
Yeah.
We managed to get
did
lost.
Did it escape your notice that that tour guide, who, while a gifted and talented musician... has never and probably will never actually give accurate directions anywhere.
Do you remember
getting lost on the way to his high school?
I do. I do remember getting lost on the way to his high school, now that you mention it. But I don't know if it's just me, but I forget these things about people because the other people in the car had reminded me of this person's problem with a sense of direction, and I didn't remember it until we were there and he was trying to help us find our way to the highway.
I mean, God love him. he's fantastic, but...
Well, it was him versus the GPS, and neither one of them were having very much luck because the GPS ended up pointing us towards an on-ramp that was closed.
Nice.
So then we tried to backtrack the entire way, and his theory... made sense. We backtracked the entire way and there was an on-ramp to go north, but no on-ramp to go south. So his theory was great. We ended up back at the highway, but we couldn't go the way we needed to go.
So in the end, you caught the tail end of Jane's Addiction?
No, we missed all of Street Sweeper. We had to stop at a Taco Bell somewhere halfway because we had all gotten gigantic-sized... cups of Pepsi or Coke or something, and we thought we were all going to miss it, but we got there as Street Sweeper was ending and got into our seats just as Nine Inch Nails was getting on.
Nice.
So it did all work out in the end. There was, if you were coming from the other direction, a major car accident that involved having to bring a helicopter in, so those people were probably mighty pissed off. And there was a small Twitter and Nin Access campaign to get Trent to postpone the show like 10 more minutes. I don't know if that worked because that's I think crazy. I was the major proponent of it and nobody else was doing it.
See, that was the funny thing because I noticed that you sent some tweets, I think the young people called them, from the concert. And
yes.
What was really funny is I was looking at other people who were at the show online and... It's funny when you see people sending tweet messages that say, hey man, put the phone down and listen to the concert. you realize how you're sending your... Never mind.
Yes. Yes. That's pot, meat kettle.
That entertains me to no end.
And they were an insane amount of cameras and phones and things with screens in the air.
See, that really annoys me when I go to a show. And I'm someone who's taped whole shows. You know, got my camera out, sat there, taped entire shows. I did it, you know, in San Francisco with the Pumpkins. And I've done it a few times since, but it still annoys me. Like, when I'm looking and I see a scene of, you know, just waving screens back and forth.
It was disconcerting, and I think it had something to... That, plus the size of the pit, had something to do with the fact that the pit was not very active.
Yeah.
I think people were like, you know, don't touch me, man. I'm trying to film the show. At least I'd heard that from other shows. So that
I can't go back in the mosh pit, man, until we get a steady cam. This is terrible.
But the energy was really good with the three other people I was with and with lots of people around us. And as I said to somebody who was complaining later about Jane's and how many people had left before Jane's, I said, come on, man, just forget it and enjoy the show yourself. Stop finding shit to bitch about. Sorry, I think I broke our don't swear. Do we have a not swear thing?
It's set to explicit. We just, I think okay. we did that because we decided that the goat related iconography was explicit.
That's true. Sure. Okay, so I can swear here and there. I will try not to.
It's all right. But, you know, you're okay. So, any set list surprises for Nanny? I mean, this is the last gig for a long time, right?
So. Yeah. Well, I mean, if it's any indication, you know, the shirts that they were selling, some of them had Wave Goodbye 1989 to 2009. So it may be the last show ever. There's the possibility. Certainly the last show for a long time. In terms of surprises, I had read up on what they were playing, so I wasn't terribly surprised, but I was... I can't say I was pleasantly surprised because I've used that word too much. But when they went slow in the middle of the set, he told this... I'd heard the story before, but this very emotional story about writing La Mer out by the ocean, how he'd gone out there to write... supposedly to write music, but he, looking back on it, says, you know, I really was going out there to kill myself. And he just opened up in a way that I haven't seen him open up before on stage. Yeah. I've heard it in interviews or whatever.
Trent not being known really as one of the most effusive guys.
You'll get a lot of thank yous or this or that, but he doesn't usually speak that much.
Yeah.
And so he had started playing La Mer, just sort of noodling away on the piano, not sure where he was going. And then told the story and, you know, at the end sort of said, you know, this is the only thing that came out of that session, but, you know, I didn't kill myself. I'm still alive and I'm going to go back to that place, even though it feels kind of haunted, and I'm going to get married there, which was really weird. Like, and it infused the middle portion of the set with this kind of romantic longing that you don't associate with Nin, because he went from La Mer into The Fragile. Mm-hmm. And The Fragile almost became like a love song in a way that I don't normally think of it. You know, the I Won't Let You Fall Apart felt really addressed to a specific, a very specific person. And it got very emotional there in the middle. And it was filled with lots of the sort of traditional, hard-edged stuff you can bang your head to.
Yeah.
But that middle portion was really nice. Other than that, I was really surprised that they came back and did Hurt. They traditionally had been closing with Head Like a Hole, or so it seems to me.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought that was it. I was exhausted. I was very happy with how the set had gone, and then they came back out for Hurt, and it was just sort of the icing on the cliche.
Nice.
Yeah. So it was fantastic. And then Jane's was good. I don't know a lot of Jane's songs, but they played the three that I do know. And
of those three, which was the one you were happiest to see?
Ocean Size, I think. Because I wasn't... I wasn't sure that they were playing that at every show. It seemed like you were getting Been Caught Stealing and Jane Says at every show.
Yeah,
so I wasn't...
They're legally required.
I wasn't worried about getting those, but I wasn't sure if I'd get Ocean Size. I'd also missed the first couple songs, so I wasn't sure if I'd missed Ocean Size, because I was out getting a t-shirt, and so when I heard it, I was really excited.
I noticed, I was reading yesterday that Jane's is offering this new deal, because they're trying to raise money for a kid who needs a heart transplant.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you can pay, was it $1,000? And then you can go backstage and watch them warm up and jam and whatnot, and then watch the show from the stage. And they'll do autographs and all that stuff that they would do backstage, but you have to forfeit basically seeing the Nin portion of the show because you'll be backstage with Jane's doing stuff. And I still thought it was a really interesting idea. I've never seen a band try to raise money like that. You know, I mean, there are usually other reasons why they'll let you backstage, but the money for the heart transplant angle was certainly an unexpected one.
Well, Trent and Nine Inch Nails had been doing it, and they ran out of space, I guess, or something.
Yeah, because it's like 10 people that they're allowing per show with the James thing.
They somehow in like 2 weeks raised 850,000 Nine Inch Nails. And it was really, that was another amazing sort of component to it, because you could see the way that the Greatwood stage was structured. Mm-hmm. You could see the people standing off to, from my vantage point, the left side of the stage.
You've directed plays, man. It's come on.
I know, but I can't remember. I didn't even remember when I directed plays.
Turn your head around in your mind and down your fixing.
You could see them on stage right and off in the corner, and it was pretty amazing to
see. I
want to
ask if they were downstage or upstage. I don't want to.
They yeah. No, don't ask me now. They're going to revoke my theater geek card if they haven't already.
That's just sad.
So it was pretty amazing show. I would have loved to have seen Street Sweeper, but I was just glad we got there in time for Nin.
Oh, that's really cool. So is this your last Nin concert?
It may very well be my last concert ever.
Oh, no.
Unless somebody else is driving of what happened afterwards.
What happened? Did you like get involved in a shootout?
No shootouts, but I realized...
You hit an old lady?
I did not hit an old lady, but I did see it. Now I'm not sure how much I want to say, because I realize people listen to this and I haven't said it anywhere exactly.
Yeah, but you were just this annoying in your udders as well. Oh, this thing happened, guys. It was really exciting. I'm not going to talk about it, though, because I should talk about it.
I don't know what's...
I mean, because of this thing, a whole bunch of other stuff is different. Yeah, the world is different. I can see the time now, but I'm not going to talk about it. But, you know, I got nothing else to talk about, really, except this thing that I'm not going to talk about because, I'm not going to talk about it. See?
Okay.
This is what happens.
Well, all right. Well, here goes. This is the first time I'm saying it publicly.
Your secrets?
No, I want to open up about it.
I'm going to start a rumor that you're having an affair with a certain guitar player from Quincy. But, I mean, that's whatever.
Actually, he lives in Somerville. He just works.
See, there you go. That's it.
He was looking very dreamy the other night. No, I'm just kidding.
Throwing it out there.
I'm just kidding. The other people drove me back as far as Kenmore. We were all together. My car was parked in Kenmore near where I work.
Right.
I got on. There was tons of construction. Eventually found a way to get onto the highway. And I was taking 93 north. I stopped, got some Hawaiian punch and a couple of donuts. Those little... chocolate frosted donuts. Right.
So whatever happens from here on, you were clearly high on sugar.
I was, yes. I was trying to be high on sugar because caffeine doesn't go well with me, and I had been up for 22 hours by that point.
Right, so you were walking on sugary sunshine.
unfortunately, the sugar high crashed really, really fast, and then I crashed sort of. I scraped... I have had trouble keeping my eyes open at the wheel in the past, but never more than like a split second, enough to scare the shit out of you, but not for anything bad to happen. Well, this time I veered off to the left and scraped up against one of those cement barriers. And
that'll wake you up.
That woke me up and then some. I was close to the New Hampshire border by that point, so I was more than... halfway home.
Wow.
And just scared. You know, there's sort of this broom, and then, you know, it sort of skids for another couple of seconds along the side, and then I got back into the lane, pulled off.
Is the automobile okay?
It is mostly okay. Luckily, I was driving the older car that that is fully paid for and what have you, and it needed to go into the shop anyway. the door has a hard time opening.
Uh-huh.
And the side part of the driver's side headlight is a little wonky, but and some dents, but you know, I'm alive.
None of those problems seem pale in comparison to the.
Yeah. I mean, I was scared, and I just think, I can't. I'm not young anymore. I don't have that limitless supply of energy, and I'm working really ridiculous hours, so. I already sort of knew going in that this might be one of the last shows I go to where I have to drive back myself. So we'll see. It may or may not be the last show. It was an amazing show, and so if that was the last one I see for a long time, I'll be happy.
Cool. Well, what do you think Trent's gonna do next?
I don't know. You know,
I think he's gonna make film scores and maybe open an expensive hat shop.
The film scores, yeah, I'm not so sure about the hat shop. I could totally see him doing more things like Ghosts, more instrumental things. You know, Ghosts was numbered Ghosts 1 through 4, right? So,
yeah.
You know, there could be more.
Very curious of him.
Yeah, yeah. And I see him getting involved in a possible Year Zero TV show, which he's talked about. In terms of touring, you know, there is something to be said for realizing that you're in your 40s and that doing what he does, which is more aggressive and it's dark, you know, it's dark and has certain qualities. You know, I think of, like, I don't think it's ever going to be a problem for Morrissey to get up and do what Morrissey does. And it's probably not a problem for Robert Smith to get up and do what The Cure does. But Nine Inch Nails has a certain energy to it that once you realize the frontman is in his 40s, as good, you know, he's in great shape, but there's something to be said for calling it quits at that point. But I could totally see him doing things like the Bridge School Benefit, which he did with sort of a, not a full orchestra, but maybe 5 or 6 pieces, stuff like that, stuff like Still, which he played a track from at the concert the other night. Gone Still, I think, was the one he played. And he played a version of The Becoming that obviously was influenced by the Still version. I'd see him doing stuff like that, but in terms of a full-scale concert, I'm not sure.
As long as he doesn't take up residency in Vegas. Sorry.
Yeah. You have to realize that, like, at Nine Inch Nails fans went, you know, there was an album in 89, there was an EP in 92 or 91, there was another album in 94, and then nothing until 99, and then nothing again until 2003, I think, or 4.
Yeah.
Maybe even 2005. And then this huge period of activity between 2003, 4, and now, where he has been on tour almost, you know, seems like 4 or 5 years, and that's just really irregular and there for him.
So do you think, before this tour wraps up, do you think he'll finally cave to pressure and perform The Perfect Drug? Which, I don't know why people are so keen to have perform, but...
No, I don't think so. I think they worked up a certain number of songs, and we've probably seen all the ones they worked up already. There are certain things I just don't think he's ever going to play, you know? I could be wrong. Maybe he busts it out, you know? The guy who needs a heart transplant is like, you know, my favorite song of all time is The Perfect Drug. I'm going to come to your show.
I never really liked it. I got to say, like, throw that out there. Like, it really excite me. And
it's a mess of a song. It sounds like he had 3 or 4 bits hanging around and he just chopped them together.
It's kind of like Nin by Numbers, you know, or something. And, So,
I had a friend who did a pretty amazing lighting project for lighting class to The Perfect Drug, but that's the only really impressive thing.
Is that how you're trying to get back your theater geek cred?
Yeah.
Oh, I was in lighting class.
By calling out, actually, that wasn't even my lighting class. That was my lighting class didn't do anything nearly that cool.
See, now you're taking it away. You see what I did there?
I do.
Nicely done.
Well, Mr. Hicks, when we were in the car the other night, he said to me that part of the appeal of Generation Goat is the self-deprecation. So, you know, I've got to keep it real.
He'll be pleased to know that our first ever live episode is going to take place probably in an Irish pub somewhere.
And, there you go. Yeah. Which Irish pub? We don't know, right?
I don't know. Maybe the Old Court in Lowell, which is a stand-up establishment. It's fantastic, actually. And they actually do really good live music and really good food. And it's run by a man named Finbar Finn, who likes to introduce himself as, "Hello, I'm Finbar Finn." you know. And he makes a big deal out of that. Actually, he will voluntarily show you his license. Just like, "I'm Finbar Finn." But they do a really nice Irish stew, so it's worth checking out.
We should do a live show. We should ask Mr. Hicks to play at our live show.
Maybe. We should.
Or even just stop by and talk.
Or stop by, yeah. Because I think, you know, frankly, I think the listeners kind of look at you as dead weight. And, you know, we could liven it up a little bit. Well, I mean, they feel the same way about me. I think most people were hoping this would be an hour-long silent episode.
They were hoping that. I've gotten some emails to that effect. Maybe you guys can, you know, you guys were friends with these dudes, Mike and Charlie, back in the day. And you
it's true. They might show up.
You could invite them.
But no, we should. We should get Mr. Hicks on our show, as if we have any clout. So that, you know, I mean, at least we'll feel cool vicariously for a little while.
Yeah.
I guess the live show isn't potentially very far off. The States in 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
As long as I can find myself a ride home from the airport, I'm sure we can work that out. So,
I don't know. You know, I could crash into something.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's dependable. So, you know, I'd ask, but yeah, I kind of, you know.
I gotta start drinking caffeine again. That's all there is to it. You know what I had that has caffeine in it was a Pepsi Throwback.
Yeah, very exciting.
And apparently it's going to be gone even before I've had it twice. I didn't realize that it had already been out and is now sort of being taken away.
I know, I hate it when they do that. You know, it's and places do it all the time. Like soft drink companies or fast food places, they're like, "Look, we've got this really actually good item, but we're only going to sell it for 3 weeks. Because if we sold it all the time, you would expect quality from our other beverages, and frankly, that's expensive."
I just, you know, I tasted it, and I know I have some friends who say they didn't taste the difference at all. Mm. It was really different to me. And the fact that they do it in all these other countries but can't do it here is frustrating.
It's funny, you know? Actually, because I remember listening to an NPR segment about how the sugar is actually cheaper now than the high fructose corn syrup.
Ridiculous.
It didn't used to be the case, but now it is. And at Whole Foods, which I guess I just lost a little bit of street cred, but I picked up some green cred. So at Whole Foods, they sell Boylan's cream soda. They have like four beverages. There's like a root beer and cream soda and other things. And the cream soda has real sugar in it. And it's the most amazing drink I think I've ever had in bottled form, apart from you know, the stuff they make in stills out in the field here, which isn't really so much in a bottle as it is like a bucket. And it's so unbelievably good. And it's weird because then, like, I'll go back and I'll drink Coke or something, and like, oh, this really does taste different. So I don't know.
I mean, Jones is the only company I know that's even sort of on a somewhat major scale using sugar, and they are also one of the few companies that uses Splenda instead of aspartame in their diet drinks, which is nice. I'm sure there are people out there who will tell me that Splenda is terrible for me too, but whenever you drink something with aspartame in it, it has those contains phenol kinetics or whatever they are, and I just don't like the idea of putting... Isn't that embalming fluid? That's what I heard once.
You know, try not to think about it.
Yeah.
A 2-liter bottle of Diet Coke.
I will get back on caffeine and then I'll pick you up from the airport.
It's a deal.
We'll go do a live goat somewhere. Maybe not that day, but...
You know, yeah. We'll Maybe on the way home. And it can end with us crashing. We'll upload it. So we're waiting for the ambulances to come. It'll be great. It'll be our Blair Witch Project ending to Generation Goat. Because it's got to end badly. I mean, it's begun badly. It's carried on badly. It's not like it's going to pick up, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe it'll even be a live video episode. We're in the same place, though. I mean, that would
mayhaps. Mayhaps. Is that a real word? Mayhaps?
It is, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Haps are chances, you see.
Right. So the other thing that happened at the Nin show and in the immediate thereafter, I'm taking up a lot of time talking about this.
That's cool.
Was
listening.
Let's see. The you're listening.
Yeah. Sort of.
And Andy's listening, ostensibly.
I'm just reading the New York Times, you carry on.
Okay. Well, so speaking of Andy and of text messages, at one point we got split up, me and the three other people I was with.
Oh no!
And I knew that there were other people at the show that I'm friends with and that I wanted to go see.
But how are you going to represent without a posse?
Well, you know, I represent all right without a posse. I'm a loner.
Yeah. You got nothing. See, with your boys over there, you'd be very
yes. So I went off, we got separated, and then we were trying to communicate about where we were going to meet up. And I got a text message from one person saying we're by the bathrooms. And the next day, my wife, Stephanie, told me that she got a text message from... this is all leading towards something much more interesting than this, I hope. She got a text message from somebody saying, "Mr. Clark, we're at the bathrooms. Meet you there." And I was like, who would have done that? And it brought me back to this incident from 3 years ago, which somehow we had got to talking about in the car. Are you still with me, folks? Where Andy had called me. Andy and you, John, as a matter of fact, called me on the day that my daughter was born, but you ended up calling my wife's cell phone.
Nice.
And so what occurred to me is that Andy, in his cell phone numbers, has me at that old number.
I think you did switch phones at some point.
And so I think he ended up texting, and it ended up with Stephanie's phone, and... I don't actually have Andy's number, so I don't know what Andy's number is. And here's where we get to the interesting
part. We'll just put it under the screen in the live podcast.
right here. So I don't know what Andy's number is, and this morning I wake up and I've got three text messages from a 978 number. And I think, maybe that's Andy, because I had emailed him the night before saying, "Hey, Andy, send me your number. And here's my number so that we can be communicating the right way." These three messages were not from Andy. I wonder whether I should read them, because they are interesting.
Let's just keep it tasteful.
I will do my best. So at 1:41 a.m. Seriously, she was here. I told you when I got out of the car that if she wasn't here, you can come, but she was here. Right after we argued, I kicked her out of my crib.
Really? That's like a real message?
It's a real message. I would show it to you, but this is an audio podcast. So there's no timestamp on the next one. So I think all three of these happened at the same time or thereabouts. Well, I am sorry. It's okay if you don't want to, this is the number two, talk to me. But if you don't end up wanting to, I will be here for you to talk to me. You are a great girl, and you're way better than her.
Oh, no, it's one of my students. All right, carry on.
Third one, which came in before I woke up, was, "Well, it was nice knowing you. I wish you would talk to me at least. But you don't have the balls, and quite frankly, you criticize yourself
because
you involve."
Just a great girl.
"But you don't have the balls, and quite frankly, you, the letter U, criticize yourself because you involve with your man."
Okay. So, if I got this right, our friend, we'll call him Malcolm. He's seeing one girl who...
Yes.
Who was at the crib.
The crib.
When the girl he's trying to talk to arrived.
Right.
And went away. But mm-hmm. she has her man somewhere else. Right. So, what we really need to do is get all these people together and start our own TV talk show kind of thing, like a yes. Jerry Springer.
This is true.
Which and I think we probably coordinate with your phone.
We could. Here's the point where I screwed all of that up. I screwed up this potential big break for Generation Goat becoming, you know, the Jerry Springer show by texting him back at 7:40 this morning, "You have the wrong number. Sorry." About an hour later, if this is correct, although I don't remember it being that long, "My bad, it was 4:30 and I just totally knocked out." I think it's supposed to be "knocked it out." "And because I did, you're going to say I have the wrong number. Give me some slack. I'm sorry. No problem with you coming here at 12.
Aye. You know what? Just just block them.
No, it gets better.
I will
hurry up. "No, dude, seriously, you have the wrong number. I am a guy, not a girl, and I don't know who you are. Hey, whatever, I think I know your effing number, Kim." So now we have a name.
I think Kim. You have to call him up as this continues and say, "Dude, do I sound like Kim to you?"
He called me from, from his cell phone, from a blocked number, right?
Uh-huh.
And right after that message, and I said, "Hello," and he hung up. And then he texted me, and he said, "Hey, Steven, tell Kim if she don't want to talk to me, that she can act like a grown-up and tell me herself."
All right, you should call the phone company and get rid of this mouth breather, because, yikes.
But it gets better, because I'm a sucker.
How can it get better?
You
showed up at your house? Like, "Kim, what happened to you?"
"And I know your poise," meaning voice, right? "And I know your poise, Steven, because you're the one who sold me Bud last night."
So now it's underage, dude?
So I wrote... Now I turn the caps lock on. "I am not who you think I am. Please stop sending me shit. I don't have a text plan, and each time you send me something, it costs me." I don't know why I didn't just call the phone company at this point, but then we got three more very quickly. "Yeah, haha, whatever. I've only been texting her on this number for 2 days now, and now
yes,
it ain't her
you've
phone.
Been texting me for 2 days, genius."
"I wasn't born yesterday, but okay. Ha, it's all good. You're only saying this because she said for me not to hit her up anymore. Have some balls, Steven." And the final one. "No wonder why her and her baby's father ain't together, because she's mad whack. I don't want her anyways. So later, tell Kim to wear condoms with all the AIDS guys she Fs."
Yikes.
At that point, I called him. And then he picks up the phone and he says, "Whoever this is, I'm really sorry. I just realized that her number was, you know," and he rattles off the other number, which is basically a couple of digits different from mine. And I sort of, at that point, my good nature comes out, and I'm like, "It's all right, man. I'm sorry you're having a bad day." And I hung up.
See.
But then I was like, this is going on a podcast. This is going on the internet. And and I may put his phone number out there just for the hell of it.
Well, maybe not, but...
Maybe not. No, but I am going to put the text messages somewhere, because...
Wow. Just wow.
Wow.
You know...
So, all of this because, you know, I wouldn't have even looked at them if I didn't think that it was Andy trying to get
me. I had a similar experience, actually, last year, here in England, where some woman kept calling my phone, and I was like, is George there? Like, no, you've... got the wrong number. There's no George here. I know he's there. I got this number from a friend, and the friend said that this is where George is, so I want to talk to him. Lady, I can't help you. I'm in the dorm room. I'm by myself. I can't help you. I'm sorry. You got the wrong number. Whoever gave you the number gave you a different number. I know he's there, and if you want him, that's all right, but I need to talk to him before he leaves me. Like, I'm really sorry, but I can't. And she called like 20 times a day, for like a week. I mean, not even like once or twice, just like 20 times a day for like a week. And like, I don't care what the two of you do together, but like, ladies. My good nature did not win out. I was finally just like, look, okay, first of all, do I sound English to you? Like George ran off with an English person? Okay, then. That's point number one. Point number two, if you keep calling me, well, you know what? Frankly, let's not even do that. This is why George left you. I don't really know what's going on in your life, but I suspect if you're like this with him, this is why he left you. Mm-hmm. I was very unpleasant, and eventually she stopped calling. It was ridiculous. Like, it's like, how old is George? He's 80. Like, it's just not going to happen. Or is he rich? You know, is George, how rich is he? Because maybe. But, I mean.
He's 80. He's 80, and he's now finally making good on his obsession with little boys with younger men.
But, the only people that were ever that persistent in calling me that I didn't want to call were, you know, military recruiters in high school. Mm. Like, that was finally it. But, oh, good Lord. Anyway, speaking of obsession, I gotta say, I watched King of Kong for the first time this week.
Oh, I still haven't seen it.
It's awesome. It's so good. I couldn't believe how good it was. I was watching it, and it's absolutely riveting. For those of you who haven't seen King of Kong, it's about the reigning Donkey Kong world champion score holder, Billy Mitchell, and this guy, Steve Wiebe, who's trying to dethrone him. And he does, and then he doesn't, and then he does, and it's this amazing back and forth. But what was really, like, the fascinating about it was you meet a lot of the gamers who are, like, serious, you know, contenders, and they are so amazingly obsessive. And it was just like, wow. You know, either there's a qualitative difference between geek obsession and nerd obsession, which I think maybe is partly the case. But you meet these guys, and okay, so Steve Wiebe has decided he's going to break this record. So he gets his Donkey Kong machine in his garage, and he's practicing. But he's got this clear whiteboard like you see in submarine, you know, movies where they find out where they're going to go. And he's mapping out all the levels. And the most mind-blowing part of that whole thing is when he said, you know you can control the barrels, right?
What?
And he's like, yeah, watch. You do a hard left, and then you move to the right, and see, the barrel goes down there every single time. I'm like, oh my god. If you were around when I was 4 years old, I would have followed you for the rest of my life. But it was really cool, and it's a local story, because all of their tournaments, well, at least a lot of their major tournaments, take place at Fun Spot, which is at Ware's Beach, because apparently they've got the Museum of Classic Gaming, and they've got 150 or 200 classic golden age of video games arcade stand-ups there. And like a lot of these guys from the movie hang around there. Like one guy, Brian Koo, who's kind of, well, comes off as a real jerk, was a banker, and he quit banking. He retired at 30, so he could go to Fun Spot every single day and try to break video game records. It's amazing. Like, having worked in the comic store, you know, we met a lot of quirky, obsessive people, but these guys, I mean, it's like some combination of autism and just, you know, just singular focus such as I just have never known in my life. And it made me kind of jealous, to be honest. But it's an amazing documentary. But the cool part, and here's where my story just takes way too long. So I'm watching King of Kong, and I open a webpage, and I'm looking at, because I'm putting a tweet about I'm watching King of Kong, and I see someone else on the list, the guy who does the Yellow Stereo, which is a music blog that I like, says, hey man, if you haven't seen King of Kong, go watch it right now. But this is before I've posted mine. And then I look up, and he's posted another one saying, watching Steve Wiebe live trying to beat the Donkey Kong world record for 3. And I load that link, and I've got the movie on one half of my screen. I'm effectively watching its sequel
right
left half of my screen.
That is awesome.
Oh, it was so weird. It was just you know,
it was a very weird experience for me watching your tweets, because I had been seeing people tweet about Weeby trying to do it all day, or that he was about to try to do it.
Right.
And then I saw that you were watching King of Kong, and just as I was about to type you saying, look, he's actually, you know, you wrote back saying, oh my God, it's actually happening right now.
It was so weird.
It was a very weird afternoon.
And it was funny because at some point, like the DVD was, you know, Billy, or Steve rather, is talking about how he's just had a massive setback. Mm. And like on the left side of my screen, the power had gone out on his King Kong game.
Oh no.
So he lost his game.
Oh.
You know, my DVD collection understands the universe that I never will.
That was the tweet that I saw, yeah.
It's weird. Like, I'm kind of worried because I'm trying to finish a dissertation chapter this weekend, and, like, the movie they're sending me right now is Brideshead Revisited, and I'm a little concerned because, you know, that takes place at Oxford and around Oxford, and it doesn't end very well. It ends with someone quitting school early. So,
oh, no.
I'm a little concerned, but...
Maybe wait to watch it until Monday,
yeah,
or until after you...
Until it's actually due. But King of Kong was awesome, and when I get home, I'm totally going to Fun Spot, because I have to see it in person.
Weir's is in New Hampshire or Maine? Is that
it's in New Hampshire. It's you know, it's kind of just northeast of Concord by a little bit on the coast. Mm. It's not far. Especially from you, actually. So.
Right. So is it is Weir's inland?
Yeah.
Or is it on the ocean? Oh, so it's on, like, Winnipesaukee.
It is on Winnipesaukee.
Okay, I was thinking, that's why I was
sorry,
thinking.
My bad.
Because there's only really two beaches in New Hampshire on the seacoast.
Right.
And I knew I remembered where Weir's was once you told me. Yeah, I should definitely get up there. My I have a friend who has a summer, not cabin, but like a summer something up there, and I'll have to get up there this summer. Yeah, I definitely want to. We were going to have an arcade meetup.
A goat field trip.
That would be excellent.
Maybe some of our listener can come.
Yes, some of them. Not their entire, because
no.
They probably have to give tours around Quincy that day.
Yeah.
Now, see, he didn't say anything about the show being appealing for making fun of him, so maybe I should stop.
We should wait to have him on, because, you know, at that point he's stuck, and it'd be awkward to just walk out in the middle, because then record, and, you know.
One amusing thing that came out of that as we were talking about Goat in the car was he had been confused about whether or not Ken Mills Lives was an active band. Like, he thought that Ken was still putting out stuff based on the song we played in that very first episode. And I said, no, that was just one thing he did way back when. And back to video games. There is this desire for a video game meetup that was supposed to happen last weekend, but got postponed because of rain.
Uh-huh.
And, to see if that maybe can dovetail nicely into a goat trip up there.
Well, that would be exciting.
Get a whole bunch of people. Because I don't know if the person... she was more interested in skee-ball, the person who was doing the meetup. But, you know, if people
they
knew...
They have skee-ball.
Oh, there you go.
And they have candlepin bowling.
Do they really?
Yeah. Wow. Well, they have both kinds. Well... Okay, I guess there are three if you count duck pin. But they have candle pin, and then they have...
I count duck pin.
Bowling.
I count duck pin. A few years ago, we went to the duck pin alley that's in the basement in
North
Chelmsford.
Yes.
For
those of you that don't know the area, I mean, it looks like a rundown storefront, and there's just a sign pointing downstairs that says bowling. And there's like four lanes down there.
Yeah, and it's a basement. I mean, it's somebody's basement, and it's got a duck pin bowling.
That's
it was awesome, though. You know?
I haven't duck pin bowled since... God, I must have been 3 or 4 years old, and I went to the Wamasit drive-in and bowling place in Tewksbury.
Yeah.
And, oh man, that place was insane. I remember them tearing it down, though, and I cried a little. Like, oh my God.
Did you know that there is still a drive-in around?
Yeah, in Milford?
In Milford, and I went last weekend. Last weekend was supposed to be my weekend of being like 5 or 6 years old again, because it was going to start with the drive-in and end with the arcade.
Nice.
It did end with an arcade. It ended with us taking Kaylee to Fun World in Nashua, which is not quite as fun spot. But it did start with the drive-in, and that was where I got to see my first two summer movies of the season.
Ooh, what'd you see?
We saw Up, which was amazing, but heart-wrenching at times.
I'm a little behind. I actually saw Monsters, Inc. for the first time last night.
What did you think of it?
It was pretty good.
Yeah.
It's weird how like computer graphics age at a rate that is not the same as normal movie special effects, because watching it, I'm like, wow, Shrek has such higher resolution, and there's such a small gap of time.
Yeah, I remember that they were really excited about getting the fur to move naturally on Sully in that movie. And it does, you know, but you're right that the resolution in something like Shrek is
it's kind of amazing. Yeah. Like, particle density just goes up so far between, like, that and Shrek 2, even, or Shrek 3.
Yeah, and I mean, it all has to do with, you know, the speed of the processors, right? Speed of processors.
Well, the amount of process.
Graphics memory, yeah. Just like everything is getting faster for us out here, you know, it must be getting faster behind the scenes. So we saw Up, and then we saw Star Trek. And halfway through Star Trek, our battery died because it had started raining a little bit. And so, you know, there's the position you put your key into. I did not know this, actually, before going to the drive-in. You know, you don't have the little thing that sits on the side anymore. You actually tune in via FM.
Right.
And there's a position to put your key into that doesn't drain the battery. And that's all well and good, but it started raining and we needed to turn on the wipers. Now, the smart person turns on the engine and to turn on the wipers.
Yeah.
But the person next to us had done that, and somebody had actually walked up to their car, banged on their window, and said, "Turn off your engine, it's too loud." So I thought, oh, I'm only going to need
to
do this.
They're in their car using the radio. Like, okay, whatever. All right.
So I was like, all right, I'm only going to need to do this for a couple of seconds. And so I did it, and I did it a couple of times. And then the last time I went to do it, the battery was dead. thankfully, the staff at the Milford Drive-In has a battery backup.
Having seen this trick a bunch of times. Yeah.
4 times that night, actually. Nice. We were the 5th, I think. And
well, at least they were practiced.
Yeah. So I missed... a little bit of the portion. Have you seen it?
Star Trek? No, I have not yet seen Star Trek.
Oh, okay, all right. So I won't be specific. So I missed a little bit of the middle portion, but not enough to completely lose track.
I'm a bit behind. The girlfriend has mono, so the going out has slowed down.
I can't imagine. Well, that one's it is really good, and it will be out for a while, I think. So you don't have to worry about that one.
Yeah.
I'm worried about X-Men Origins Wolverine, which I've heard is not so good, but which I still really want to see. And
I'm
afraid
I'm going on Tuesday to see Wolverine.
Oh yeah. I don't know when I'm going to get to go see. Maybe I'll convince them to go to the drive-in again tonight. I don't know what's playing over there, but it's a ridiculously good deal. You go to the regular cinema, you're spending $10 an adult.
Yes.
Plus whatever you're paying for the kid. The kid probably isn't going to sit still and is probably going to bother somebody in the theater, which
I'm
is a big...
I'm probably going to stuff it into something.
It's a big consideration for me because I've been in plenty of movies where there's a screaming kid, and I don't want my kid to be that screaming kid.
Right.
So the drive-in is $20 for up to 6 people in one car.
That's
you see
cool.
2 movies. You do have to deal with sort of subpar audio and subpar... picture to a certain extent, but it's pretty good. It's better than I thought it was going to be.
Now, does your movie theater, the drive-in that is, does it come with like those enormous bags of popcorn that we got when we were kids that are like 50 pounds of popcorn in the bag?
You know, we got a small bag and it was pretty big, so I think the big one is probably better. And what was nice was these were not... regular movie theater concession prices. These were all pretty reasonable. They have, you know, they want to stay in business. I don't think they have to work that hard though, because they're the only one left, and people in the area do realize what a good value it is, especially in the economy as it is.
There's a lot of kind of novelty movie theaters in our area. There's that other place in Pelham. What's his name? Chunky's.
There's actually three of them. And
just kind of like a 50s style restaurant where you go and you sit inside a faux classic car and there's a movie, right? While you're
yeah, I think that's the deal with some of them. The one that I've been to most recently, it was the one in Pelham.
Uh-huh.
At least the theater where we were in was mostly just seats. They had some that were structured around really long tables,
mm-hmm.
With these sort of the nicest leather recliner armchairs you could not leather, but sort of really nice armchairs you could recline in. And we went for a daycare event. And they put on a movie, and the kids were all nuts because they were all there with their friends, and they watched maybe 20 minutes of it and then just ran around. But it was really nice. And for me, that's what ends up being, we haven't seen a lot of movies since we've had Kaylee around because we have to get a sitter.
Right.
But these couple of novelty things are really good for that because I think people go in not expecting the traditional movie experience of a quiet theater, and
yeah,
but you don't even get that at the regular movie theater anymore.
That's true. It is one
unfortunately
of, that drives me the closest to physical harm when it comes to a.
I remember the two of us going to see Munich, I think it was, and yes. you were about to murder somebody.
Well, you know, it's just I don't know when it became acceptable, but like it seems like the pendulum has shifted, and now people like expect that, well, I can go to the movie theater and just talk as much as I want to because
mm-hmm.
I paid to get in. Like, well, we all paid to get in, and
right.
we didn't pay to see you.
Yeah.
I went to see Coraline because it just opened in the UK, and I went a couple weeks ago. You know, which I've seen before, and I liked it. I thought it was, you know, pretty clever, and it's entertaining. But we. There weren't many people in the theater because we went at a weird time, but there were these old people like three rows in front of us, and they were like 2-year-old kids. They're like, oh, look, that's in 3D. Oh, look, it's moving. Oh, look at that. Oh, you know what else was in 3D that I remember? Shut up. You know, or at least whisper. Don't like, you know, announce to everyone. the only time I think it's ever been amusing to have someone yell out, I can't remember what the movie was now, but I remember Patrick Swayze was a sort of a detective fellow. And he finds this girl who's been kidnapped, chained up in somebody's basement. Somebody yelled, nobody chains baby in a corner. It might be an Andy story, actually.
That's pretty funny.
Which I remember being very amused by. But yeah, in general, no, just no. Although, that said, I didn't have a problem with people applauding when either Captain Kirk got killed or when Yoda went crazy in Attack of the Clones.
But, I think clapping and going crazy for a moment like that is okay. Like that, because that's what you're reacting to the movie,
right.
As opposed to just making noise about, you know, what what 3D movie you've seen before or what have you. And you know where the really uncomfortable part is when somebody has to lean over to explain something to someone and they're being just a little too loud. Because if they do it once, okay.
Yeah.
You know, but then when it's the person turning to the other person and asking them questions throughout the entire thing.
It also depends on the movie, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, the water is shaking, you see, because the dinosaur is really big. So there's a dinosaur coming, and it's going boom, 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 boom. Okay. Wait, that dinosaur walked in the room and the water didn't shake in the thing. Well, that's a little dinosaur, you see. Yeah, that's kind of embarrassing. I remember actually in high school when they took everyone to see Schindler's List kind of in packs, and I remember sitting in front of this girl who, I was looking for a polite way to say stupid, but I think that actually is the more polite term. So there's a scene when they're liquidating the ghetto in Warsaw, and they're lining people up and just shooting them. And there's kind of this, you know, focus of the blood pooling in the snow. And the girl's like, ha, that looks so funny. Look at all the blood. Oh my God. Ha, ha, ha. And so the movie's going along, and I'm just like, oh, my God. And she's just laughing at stuff. And Like, okay, I mean, I know we live in an affluent suburb, but I didn't think we were openly white supremacists.
Yeah.
And we get to the end of the movie, and they're putting the little stones on the grave as they walk past. And she's like, oh, what? You mean it's a true story? What? Oh, my God. Oh, that's terrible. You need to shut up, and then you need to die.
I need to give you a copy of the... We need to take out a copy of the yearbook, find this person's face, and I can't believe it. Are you? Is there a statute of limitations on being an idiot in high school? Like,
no,
no. So,
but what I want to know is, like, why was it funny when it was fake? You know, like, yeah. You've seen Schindler's List.
I have.
At no point is it the feel-good movie of the summer.
No,
you know?
No.
I mean, it's just no.
I don't know how I managed to not see it in one of those packs because. I remember I didn't see it until I think NBC broadcast it commercial free with sort of the one break in the middle somewhere.
Which is absolutely something that couldn't happen now because of the way the FCC is crazy about stuff now.
Right. Yeah, I remember. And they didn't edit it. They didn't do anything to it. They just, but because it was an important movie, they put it out there. One of the last times I remember being really... pleased with how with the TV station sort of doing something Schindler's List definitely not a summer movie blockbuster, but
I mean maybe if Jerry Bruckheimer remade it, but even I don't think that's gonna help, you know. It's
maybe there will be a Transformer Holocaust in a new Transformer movie. Speaking of
that would be awful. What would that entail? You know what? I should not go down this road.
No.
I'm Batman, because immediately I'm thinking, well, what are they going to do? Like, what if the trains are Transformers that they're transporting them on? And then...
Oh, God.
That would just be wrong. Yeah, so how do they move the trans... No, you know what? Just forget it. Right. I'm just gonna leave it. That's, wow. Although, you know, speaking of things that lay waste to the world, I read today that Ridley Scott is working on a new Alien movie. But it'll be a prequel to the very first Alien movie, and it's kind of like one of these reboot kind of situations. So I'm intrigued. There were no other real details. It was just on the little Sci-Fi Wire thing. But, you know, there's a franchise that I think could use a kind of reinvention.
Mm. You know what else is coming out is a remake of Clash of the Titans.
Which I saw it on your website, in fact.
Yeah. And yesterday I went and I had a... Because I'd almost got into a car accident the night before and I had to go to a pretty painful doctor's appointment. I sat in bed for part of the afternoon and watched the original.
Nice.
And it did not age well.
No.
No,
but that was true, amazing. Like a week after it came out.
Yeah. It's you sort of look at it and you're like, this is what they were doing in 1981. I mean, Star Wars came out in 77 and looks better than this. You know,
Empire was still in some theaters in 81 so.
And looked better than the one interesting thing was there is I don't know if it was not full frontal nudity, but there's toplessness in a couple of scenes, and it's a PG-rated movie.
Well, it's mythological toplessness.
You know, this is of course before there was a PG-13, and not
true.
And it's not definitely not an R-rated movie.
What was the first PG-13 rated movie? I wonder.
I can't remember. I don't know if we've talked about this or I've talked about it with somebody else. I think it was somebody thought it was Temple of Doom because of the monkey brains or because of something or the hearts being torn out.
Chilled monkey brains.
Yeah. I have a friend you can't talk to about Indiana Jones anymore because of the fourth one. He
that movie was so bad. It's just worth talking about. Yeah. From the fount of all knowledge, Wikipedia, in 1984, explicit violence in the PG-rated films Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and Gremlins, did Gremlins have explicit violence? Were, quote, the straws that broke the parents' backs. Their complaints led Hollywood figure Steven Spielberg, director of Temple of Doom and producer of Gremlins, to suggest a new rating, PG-14, to PAA President Jack Valenti. Blah, 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 blah. First widely distributed PG-13 movie was Red Dawn, followed by Dreamscape and The Flamingo Kid. So there you go. Although, it points out, the first one to actually get the PG-13 was The Flamingo Kid, but it came out later, so. So there we go.
Here's a side note. I think we might have just gone echo. I can edit this little section out if that's in fact the case. I'm hearing my voice come through where I hadn't heard my voice come through before.
It's possible that you just moved closer to the microphone. Let me turn you down. Yeah. Actually, I'll just mute you all together. It's me today.
Okay, well, yeah, so now I don't know whether to edit that part out or not edit it out, because it's rather amusing.
Just stay away from the microphone. We'll be all right.
Okay.
I mean, it's summer movie season, but what about summer TV season? I mean, there's plenty of remakes to tide us over. We can watch Land of the Lost, I guess, but...
I don't have any desire.
I'm not really. Although I like Sleestaks. I was always a fan of Sleestaks and their crystal architecture when I was a little kid. I always thought their stuff looked cool. But anything worth watching on TV? I know you're doing this Lost rewatch thing, although I still don't know what that is.
I want to do the Lost rewatch. I haven't started it yet. The idea being they are going... I don't know which site it was... one of the Lost fan sites decided to organize a schedule whereby we could watch the entire series leading up to the premiere of season 6 in January by watching something like 3 to 4 episodes a week, which makes sense in theory, because you're like, 3 to 4 episodes a week, I can handle that. But the problem with episodes of Lost I've found is that you sit down to watch one,
yep,
and... you've got them all there. You're not going to watch just one or two or three or four. So you might actually sit there for an entire day and watch 6.
I had the same problem with early seasons of The West Wing, actually, where it was just like, there's only 22 episodes. I can knock this out in a day.
Right. And 24 must be like that, too. You know, if somebody was like, let's watch all the episodes of 24 until it comes back on. Yeah. You know, you could do that for the 4 days or 5 days or how many seasons there have been right before the next season.
So what you're really telling me is that Lost fans are turning into Trek fans.
Maybe a little bit. I think
in the obsessive completist, let's rewatch that again.
I have not rewatched the entire series in a while. I did rewatch all of season 5 before the finale came on.
Yeah. I have watched the finale twice now, 3 times.
Yeah.
Because it's just so awesome. But
it is ridiculously awesome.
You know what? Forget it. Spoiler alert. Okay.
So, spoilers!
Juliet, obviously, not dead.
Not dead at all.
It's too obvious that she died, I think. Mm-hmm. And they've already said, they said yesterday that Claire will play a major role in the next season. So we got that going for us.
Yes.
What do you think? Every dead person coming back or not?
No, I don't think every dead person comes back. I think... I was really worried because the actress who plays Juliet is cast in the remake of V, which is also on ABC. But they have said that she will be back. And then I've read conflicting reports about how much of a role she'll have. But as long as she's back in some capacity, cool with me.
I'd be okay if Boone and Shannon don't make it, you know, okay with that. I mean, I'm sure the guy who plays Boone could use the work, but
yeah, probably,
you know, it's fine if they go Nikki and Paolo with them.
Yeah. That it'd be okay to lose them. I don't know. I'm really confused and concerned about where this could go. I have faith in the producers, but I don't want to spend another season off island, like waiting for them to come back to the island. Maybe that's just me, but that's where like Doc Jensen from Entertainment Weekly, who is a huge like Lost fan who obsesses about every little detail and comes up with these crazy theories. He seems to think that everything's been reset or rebooted.
See, I can't buy into that. There's not enough time in a season. to establish what they're doing and get them back and then get them involved with each other and then let them figure out who they really are. And there's no time for that.
No,
I think what you're going to find out is that, you know, the explosion was either too small to do what Faraday wanted to do.
Right.
You know, or that it kind of worked in that everybody got shifted a certain amount of time, but they're still on the island.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is another possibility. You look at Desmond, who kind of gets moved in an odd sort of way when the swan implodes. I think, you know, it's more likely it's localized, it's small scale, and maybe it, you know, just maybe it does bring them right back to around the time they first crashed there. Who knows?
No. Yeah. I think they said they, I swear I read in an interview that they were done with time travel.
Like yeah.
that last season was the time travel thing, and then they weren't going to do it anymore.
Right.
I really, like, I love the time travel bits. I just hope that it's over. I don't want to do a whole nother season of time travel.
I think they've been pretty honest about stuff so far.
Yeah.
In the most part, you know, they've played around with stuff, but they've never outright lied. So.
And if that's the case, I mean, how are they going to, you know, other than just immediately shifting everybody back to the present so that they're all there on the island in 2007 again, I don't see how they avoid time travel. Because you've got... And also, are they going to wipe out everything that just happened with the bad dude, Jacob's nemesis, and Locke and all of that? You know, that whole stuff is still going on.
I can't see it happening.
You know, are they going to wipe all of that out? I don't see it happening either. I think the only idea I have about what happened with the bomb ties into what happened to the statue for me. And that is, I have this idea in my head that that the power of the bomb was dispersed through time, and that possibly it destroyed the statue.
Interesting.
I don't know that. I just think those are what else knocked down that entire statue.
Mm.
Lots of things could have, but there's that. I think what would be interesting. What happens if they go, and they get transported back to Black Rock time? A lot of this is just coming to me right now. Because we got that scene at the beginning of the finale with those two guys and the Black Rock in the distance. At least I think it's the Black Rock. And, you know, that character, the evil character, or the non-Jacob character, because who knows who's evil, is now basically
who Christian and Claire are really working for. And
yeah.
Whether they're good or evil.
Well, so now that character's being played by Terry O'Quinn as faux Locke, but I like those two characters together too much to never see that guy again. And so what if the Losties end up, the ones who were in 77 end up there, and then have to convince Jacob to do for them what he did for Richard, who says that he's ageless because of, I don't know, that's
interesting.
Probably a little out there.
I mean, you know, for me the biggest mystery about Jacob right now is when he says they're coming.
Mm.
Before he dies, and who's coming? You know, does he mean the people are coming back through time to where they should be, and that they will cause trouble, or
mm-hmm.
you know, people are coming from off the island? I mean, Penny and Desmond are presumably on their way. Who I think are still my favorite bid for the two skeletons in the cave, which Carlton Cuse did say yesterday we will definitely get back to.
Did. Some people I've heard say Rose and Bernard, but as much as I love Rose and Bernard, I don't think they're important enough to be the skeletons. But you never know.
They've gone and settled somewhere else as well. You know,
right.
They seem like they've just kind of written themselves out of the story.
It was a brilliant ending for them. I mean, I thought you bring them back, they get this really sort of great moment with Juliet, and then that's it. They're done, and it's a way. What more, without killing them, you know, they're probably the two characters who, you know, sort of got written out of the show without being killed, because how else do you write somebody out of Lost?
Yeah, that's true. Actually, pretty much nobody has been written out of Lost apart from Yeah, apart from, incidental.
Except for Claire this season, this past season, yeah. She sort of wasn't there.
It's all very exciting. Yeah,
it's very exciting, and I don't know. I'm not feeling. Maybe I will feel differently come the end of the summer or September, when it's been a long time since it's been off. But I don't feel as crazy about, like, oh my god, it was an amazing cliffhanger. But I'm not mad or anxious or dying for the next season, because I know the next season is the last season. So yeah. I'm sort of savoring the wait as much as I'm savoring what's to come.
Well, January is still a long ways off. So
yeah, so there's lots of time to feel antsy about when is it coming back.
What do you think? Do we do a good job this week? Do we need more?
I think we've done a fine job.
Anything we should look for from Geek Force 5 this week? Or from eChristopherClark.com?
No, nothing from Geek Force 5. I'm just going to keep trying to get 5 stories a day up there. I've had some luck with that. On eChristopherClark.com, come Monday, I start a sort of new schedule of putting out a story or a bit of a story once a week instead of daily. That's my plan, and hopefully I'll be able to stick to something a little bit more regular. And eventually I'm thinking about podcasting some of the stories, but I want to get a better microphone.
I've been thinking a little bit about that actually with some of the songs entries, but
yeah. So what about you? Anything coming up on the site?
Well, there's Generation Goat number 6.
Yes.
I am working on some things. It's been really slow. I've been spending some time taking care of Nora, and I've been struggling under the weight of this dissertation chapter. But since it's due on Tuesday, I've got the rest of the week to kind of, you know, relax and update. I have been toying with, I think I found a way to make One Imaginary Blog work again. Which is, you know, I think I might pick an album for a month and just fill in the gaps of that album over the course of a month and then move along to something else. Because I think having no structure and being able to pick from like 220 songs, it makes it, there's a crisis of decision, which I think, you know, if I just say this month, it's going to be Disintegration, that.
Right.
It gets easier, and also makes the entries a little more cohesive, I think. So, so that's my plan. I might do that this week. And
I like that idea. I haven't done any Nin entries in a long time, and that makes a lot of sense to me as a reason why that might not happen.
So, So there we are. So that's it. That's a goat.
That's a goat.
We need a catchphrase here.
We need a catchphrase. We do.
Listeners. Set your catchphrases at Generation Goat on Twitter.
Yes. Or if you can't remember that, at Songs That Saved or at ECC 1977, I suppose. That's what they do on a lot of the podcasts that I listen to from, like, Revision 3. They end with saying their Twitter handles and... how else do they lend?
Some of them just end by shooting each other.
All right. Got the sound effects right now. Bam.
Take it easy, guys.
Take it easy.